The wind don't always blow and the sun goes down at night, and that's when we need batteries. They're the hope of the green revolution, but ditching carbon is going to require masses of these things, these dirty, filthy things called batteries. As Jane Turner wrote in his book, Charged, A History of Batteries and Lessons for a Clean Energy Future, batteries depend upon wresting raw materials from the earth, applying immense amounts of energy to refine those materials and assemble them into batteries, often at some risk to both the environment and human health. Jay Turner joins us now to talk batteries. Jay is Professor of Environmental Studies at Wesley College, Massachusetts, and President of the American Society for Environmental History. Jay, welcome to Late Night Live.
Thanks, David. It's great to be with you.
Look, for clumsy idiots like me, remind us, what is a battery?
Battery is a combination of highly refined materials that does something really useful to us. And a chemical format, it can store energy and return it as electricity, right? So a battery is composed of an anode and a cathode and an electrolyte. And when we're talking about lithium ion batteries, which are on everybody's minds these days, it's the lithium ions that shuttle back and forth as you charge and discharge the battery and, you know, provide the electricity that can run cars or back up the electricity grid or, you know, run your kid's toy these days, all of which are very important things.
The point you make in the book, which I found so interesting, we've been using batteries for a long time.
We really have, right? I mean, we're counting on them for this kind of renewable energy future, this clean energy future, but they have been essential to, you know, the basic systems of mobility and communication since the late 19th century. So, the most commonly used battery are the lead acid batteries, which were under the hood of every car, you know, starting those cars and making sure the lights worked and then later the radios worked all through the 20th century. So, right. Batteries have, you know, been important in terms of, you know, being used, being sourced and manufactured, but also being recycled all throughout the 20th century. Right. So this book that I wrote really looks back at that history, the fact that we've been using these batteries for so long, and tries to figure out, what can that history help us think through as we look towards this battery powered future that seems to be looming in front of us.
You argue that we are not going to deal with climate change just by getting better and better at recycling or using a little bit less energy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And what is going to be required is what you call a rapid pivot to clean energy economy. And that rapid pivot is going to require batteries.
That's right. It would be great if we could kind of recycle our way to this clean energy future. But all of the, technologies that we need to scale up, whether it's solar panels or wind turbines or motors for electric vehicles or the batteries for electric vehicles or to power people's homes or to back up the utility grid, all of these different technologies require materials at scales where, they're not currently in circulation. They're not available to be recycled. And right. So if we're going to move towards this clean energy future, one of the big points that I make in the book is that we really have to own up to the fact that we're going to have to pull a lot of other materials, the lithium, the nickel, the silicon, the graphite, out of the earth if we want to leave fossil fuels in the earth. And, that's hard work. Mining's an extractive industry. It has to be done well, managed well, but it's critical work if we want to build a more sustainable future.
You're not arguing in any way that it's not worth our while, are you?
No. There's no question in my mind that, making this investment, scaling up these technologies, pulling those resources out of the environment, all of that is vastly preferable to continuing with the status quo. I mean, maybe that wasn't the case 30 years ago when these technologies weren't ready to go. But, kind of looking around the world today, we can see solar and wind and batteries being deployed at scales that, really kind of boggle the mind compared to where we were 30 years ago. So it's not as if we have to, give up, our ability to communicate or move around. It's, we need to do it in new ways. And these clean energy technologies can make that possible.
You remind us that, golly, it's now 50 years ago, isn't it? In the 1970s, when there was a huge spike in the price of oil, people looked very, very attentively at renewable sources of energy. But when the price of oil came down, their attention went elsewhere. And I'm wondering whether you still see the price of oil as one of the drivers of commitment to renewables.
Certainly the price of oil and fossil fuels and natural gas, I mean, those are immensely relevant to the global economy. And, you know, as, you know, demand wanes and the price of those fossil fuels falls, I mean, it's going to be hard to make them go away without regulatory action. And, you know, currently in the United States, where I live, we're going in the exact opposite direction that someone who cares about the environment like I do would like to see. But I think, in my mind, what's even more important than the price of oil and other fossil fuels is the price of these renewable energy technologies. And, you know, batteries in particular have, you know, the price has plummeted, you know, kind of along the same curve that we saw solar fall and wind to a lesser extent fall. But, you know, to make these technologies much less expensive, much more cost competitive with existing energy systems. And that's really what's been, you know, driving this transition and creating the possibilities to substitute for fossil fuels with clean energy technologies has been just how much less expensive they've been as production has scaled up.
But Jay, are we actually going to be able to make the number of batteries that we need?
You know, the investments needed to do that are enormous, but we're seeing that happen kind of in real time. And part of this is, you know, the development of supply chains that run through Australia. It's investments in materials processing and manufacturing capacity. And China has, you know, really kind of shown what is possible, right? China has started, you know, kind of built upon its history of consumer electronics manufacturing and transition from, you know, manufacturing laptops to manufacturing the batteries for cars. And now the batteries that are going into, you know, utility scale, you know, battery storage systems. And, you know, at this point, China's manufacturing enough batteries to meet half of the new car sales in China. And really the question isn't so much, are there going to be enough batteries, but, you know, is there overcapacity? You know, how to move these batteries to market quickly enough?
Do you remember, it seems only yesterday, that China was the excuse for everybody else doing nothing about renewables because China didn't care? Remember that?
China. I do, right? I mean, the story was they were building two coal-fired power plants, right?
That's, you know, right.
Every week. And there's still significant investment in fossil fuels happening in China, but China is also making enormous investments, right, in this energy transition.
On ABC Radio National, this is Late Night Live. I'm David Marr, and I am talking to Jay Turner about batteries. Jay, batteries are better now, are they not? And are they getting better and better at storing energy? I'm thinking of the, you know, the challenge for electric cars. This is Australia is a big country, and electric cars are expected to go every now and again long distances. Are batteries getting better at doing their work?
Batteries have definitely gotten better. But the way I kind of put it in the book is that they're still just good enough, right? They could be a lot better, right? They could, you know, recharge in 5 minutes, or they could, you know, power a car for, you know, for 1,000 kilometers. And those are things that most cars, most batteries cannot do. So the batteries we have are just good enough. But I think, you know, to your point, you know, batteries have improved significantly. And so the lithium-ion battery, if you just want the real short version of the story, it was first commercialized in the early 1990s by Sony for a camcorder. And, you know, there have been a number of incremental improvements that have made lithium-ion batteries kind of, you know, better in the sense that you can store 4 or 5 times more energy kind of per battery, per unit weight compared to the early 1990s. But the other thing that's important to realize about batteries is it's not just how much energy is stored in the battery, but it's what can you do with that energy? And so, you know, I think another really important story is just how much more efficiently we're able to use that kind of finite amount of energy that's stored in those batteries, right? So the processing power of the chips that go into the laptops or now into the electric vehicles, right? They've become vastly more efficient. They've become much more efficient, much faster than the batteries have actually gotten better at storing energy. Likewise, electric car motors have become more efficient. And so even if batteries have improved slowly, the ways in which we use batteries, the technologies they power, you know, they have improved even faster. And so we're able to do more useful things with the batteries that we have. So the batteries, yeah, they're just good enough. And I think they're going to get better as we move forward.
What do we do with them when they're done?
That is something that's probably the question I get most often. And I think, you know, a lesson from history is useful. Lead acid batteries are the starter batteries in all of our gasoline cars. And, you know, lead acid battery weighs, I don't know, 10, 12 kilograms, right? It's heavy if you've ever pulled one out and tried to change your own battery. And lead's toxic. And so there have, you know, been longstanding concerns about the human health and environmental consequences of lead acid batteries. As a result, and I guess one other factor here is that, you know, sourcing lead, mining it, is hard work, takes a lot of energy, it's expensive, but you can also recycle lead relatively easily. And I mention all of this because at this point, there is a circular supply chain that's been built up to take lead acid batteries and to recycle them. And so in countries like Australia, the United States, you know, the rates of recycling for lead acid batteries approach 100%. Which, you know, if you want a model for a circular supply chain, right, that's a really good model. That's, you know, recycling that has to be done very carefully. You know, if you look in some parts of the world where the recycling facilities are not as well regulated, they're not as well capitalized, they don't have pollution control technologies, you know, there's some devastating examples of poor lead recycling. And those are stories that I tell in the book. But if done well, right, recycling lead acid batteries is a model for a closed loop supply chain. So the real question is, can we do that again? Right now we're using lithium ion batteries at scale. And lithium ion batteries are harder to recycle than lead acid batteries. But at the same time, there's a lot of investment in recycling lithium ion batteries. And the you know, as their use is growing in electric cars, you know, the incentive for companies to make that investment is expanding. So in the United States, we're already seeing a lot of work to scale up the recycling infrastructure for lithium ion batteries. And we've got to do that. You know, we started off talking about how important mining is. It's going to be important, but we also need to recycle these batteries at end of life so that we can move from more mining to more recycling, you know, 5, 10, 15 years from now.
But you don't bother to recycle the humble old AA battery.
I do not.
This is a confession, Jay. Let us have it loud and clear.
Right. So those double A batteries. So, you know, once upon a time, properly kind of managing them at end of life was really important because they had mercury in them. And the mercury was phased out in the early 1990s. And that's another kind of interesting environmental success story in the world of batteries. But as a result of that, kind of what's left in those AA batteries, the single use batteries, is you know, a lot of kind of very highly processed dirt. It's manganese and graphite carbon, which, you know, can be thrown, which one is very hard to recycle, and two can be safely thrown away. And so, yeah, that is my confession. I, you know, after reading all the studies and the life cycle analyses, I realized that it takes more work to try and recycle those batteries than you actually save energy by doing it. So I don't recycle those AA batteries.
I can't tell you how relieved I am. I now no longer feel guilty about slipping them into the garbage. But what do you see now as the priorities for clean energy policy? Is it a matter of making bigger and more efficient batteries? Is that really the way forward from this point?
I think the big priorities are making these technologies accessible at scale. And, you know, some of that work happens at the scale of, you know, utility grids, where there's, you know, the challenge of balancing supply and load. And, you know, in Australia, right, you've seen tremendous investments in solar, especially in the last decade. And, you know, you need batteries, you know, as you launched off the the segment, right? Because the sun is not always there, right? If you're going to balance out the supply and match the demand. So providing the policies and the incentives to do that at large scale is important. But I think it's also essential to do this at the small scale, right? At the scale of individual homeowners as well. Because these kinds of clean energy technologies are distributed. And having lots of small batteries, and Australia has programs to support the deployment of residential battery storage, right? That becomes important because, with new communication technologies, right, you can coordinate distributed batteries in ways that can supplement kind of grid operations. And so, a coordinated approach that's both, large scale and working at the level of individual households, right? Those are the ways that you can start to deploy these technologies that are really resource efficient and, give us a path to move forward and away from fossil fuels.
And the result will be reliable baseload energy. I mean, there's a huge argument in Australia that we have to keep burning gas in order to have baseload. And indeed, the conservative political parties in this country, Jay, you'll be surprised to hear perhaps, are even talking about nuclear generation of electricity. But can we, by storing either in big home batteries or smaller batteries in cars, et cetera, provide something which we can call absolutely reliable base load?
Yeah. To supply reliable electricity 24/7, 365 days a year, it's clear that renewables with battery storage and other forms of storage as well can play a key role in this process. And you're right, there are other technologies we haven't talked about, like geothermal electricity generation, which is also advancing. But there's a place for nuclear in this electricity equation. Clearly it offers some advantages that renewables do not. And my guess is that we're going to see some small amount of fossil fuels, right, to help with peaking and reliability. Those will persist for some time as well. But I think, the biggest point, right, the policies, the way the economics are going, the environmental imperative to move to clean energy, is that we're going to see a massive transition in this direction in ways that, were hard to imagine really just 25 years ago, or even when I was writing my book, which came out in 2022, that you could deploy lithium ion batteries at scale to provide long-term storage on the electricity grid. That was just starting to happen, right? And now we've seen that happening rapidly in the United States, in Australia, in China, and all sorts of places around the world. So the change is happening more quickly than I think people anticipated even a decade ago.
Jay, thanks so much for joining us on Late Night Live.
Thanks, David. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
I've been talking to Jay Turner, Professor of Environmental Studies at Wesley College and the author of this terrific book, Charged, A History of Batteries and Lessons for a Clean Energy Future. This is Late Night Live.